Esther Safran IV grew up in a home where the past was too terrible to speak of. Born in Poland after World War II, her mother and father, each the sole survivors of their respective families, for Esther, the Holocaust loomed in the backdrop of her daily life, but never felt discussed. The result was a childhood marked by painful silences and continued tragedy. Even as she built a successful career, married, and raised three children, Esther always felt herself searching. When Esther was in her early 40s, her mother casually mentioned an astonishing revelation that Esther's father had a previous wife and daughter, both murdered in the Holocaust. That would mark the beginning of the search that would define the next 20 years. She writes about it in her new book, I Want You to Know We're Still Here, where she recounts her journey to piece together her past. Esther Safran IV was the CEO of Sixth and I, a center for arts, ideas, and religion. She lives in Washington with her husband, Bert. They are the parents of Franklin, Jonathan, and Joshua Safran IV, all best-selling authors. And it's a great pleasure to welcome Esther Safran IV to our program this morning. Thank you very much for being with us.
Glad to be here. Thrilled to be here.
What brought you to the point of wanting to tell this story, to tell your story?
It's a story that I've lived with most of my life. It's a story that's been marinating, if you will, and it's a story about a tragic past. But I was spending my outward life while these ghosts were living with me. I was living a very successful, wonderful life, successful career, mother of three, grandmother of six. And I had reached a point where I had been spending a lot of time telling other people's stories, developing a cultural institution in Washington that was very forward-looking. And I realized it had become time for me to look back. And maybe part of that was that my mother lived with us the last few years of her life. Part of it was that I had these grandchildren. And I realized if I didn't put the story down, that they wouldn't have it. And I wanted them to understand where they came from. And ultimately, it became a book, and I'm thrilled to share it with other people.
So when you were in your early 40s, your mother mentions to you rather casually that your father had a previous wife and daughter.
Right.
Both murdered in the Holocaust. What kind of search for information did that set off for you?
Well, I didn't realize the intensity of the search at the time, but every place I went, I started scouring databases, doing the online stuff without coming up with anything. But then I had the opportunity to travel in Israel and Brazil and connect with people who came from that part of the world. The other thing, what really broke the case, if you will, was my middle son, Jonathan, wrote a book, Everything is Illuminated, which became an international bestseller and a movie. It was a work of fiction about that part of the world and about his family. And people started calling me and say, he got it all wrong. This wasn't what our village looked like. This wasn't where it was. This isn't what happened. And I'd have to say, well, of course he got it wrong. It was a work of fiction. And because he wrote that book and because people started to come to me with real information, I was able to start to put things together. And 10 years after he took his trip to Ukraine while he was a senior in college and ended up finding nothing, so wrote this novel, I was able to go back. And based on the new information that emerged kind of out of his work of fiction, to put the pieces together and find much more than I ever thought I could find.
Was it always solely your project, or did Jonathan Safran IV and the success, the incredible success of that novel, Everything is Illuminated, make it a quest for him as well?
So, I think the quest was primarily my quest.
Mm-hmm.
And one of my sons said I was kind of using child labor. that when our oldest son was in high school, I suggested that he interview his grandmother for a research project. And he did it. And it the teachers weren't really thrilled in the beginning. They thought it wasn't a very serious project. It turned out to be fabulous. And he recorded the first pieces of that story. And I always knew that while my mother wouldn't tell me a lot of things, that with her grandchildren, she saw immortality. And she would tell them things that she wouldn't tell me. So first, I encouraged Frank to do that project. And then when Jonathan was in college, he wanted to spend the summer in Prague. And I thought, well, that's great, you know, as long as you find a way to pay for it. And but at the same time, he needed a senior project. So I suggested, among other things he was considering, that he could go back to Ukraine. We had a picture of the family that hid my father, that he could take that picture and maybe find those people. And he gave it a try. And he spent 5 days in Ukraine and found absolutely nothing, which gave him the freedom to use his imagination to write a bestseller. But in the meantime, each of my sons had, in their own way, opened doors for me.
So what's interesting, at least to me, is if I'm reading this correctly, is that you encouraged him to visit a shtetl in Ukraine. As you say, he came up with nothing and ended up writing the novel. But because of the success of the novel, it really did awaken interest in that place in Ukraine, in that shtetl, that allowed right. you to find new clues to what you were looking for.
Exactly, exactly. And by the way, this shtetl doesn't exist. I mean, we both went to a place that has been totally leveled. But we also went to other shtetls that our family came from. And each place I went, I was able to find a piece of the story. And fortunately, I went in 2009. A lot of the people I met at that time are now no longer with us. So I had a lot of luck with my timing.
In the sense of the trips to Brazil and to Israel and to Ukraine, these all add up. They're all other puzzle pieces, if you will. But then there's the right. act of putting them together and making, of connecting the dots, which, as you write, right. is really difficult to figure out, to because there are at some points really huge gaps to fill.
Oh, absolutely. And I think there are people who have now described me as like a Sherlock Holmes, which I hadn't thought of myself as. But I loved putting the pieces together. I've probably, because my family tree was cut off at the base, it was just a stump. I am very good at figuring out connections of people, at looking at people's faces and figuring out who they're related to. So this came kind of naturally to me. But in this search, in addition to my online searches and my seeking out people who came from this place who had information, I, much to my amazement, finally decided to hire an FBI forensic photography expert, because I'd hired some researchers in Ukraine who sent pictures back to me of people they thought were related to the people in my picture that Jonathan was looking for and that I was looking for. And this FBI, former FBI agent who'd been involved in some very big cases, I spent an hour with him. He looked at my pictures and he said, "I can't tell you it's the same people, but I can't tell you it's not." And he gave me some clues of what to look for when I got to Ukraine. And one of the most important clues, something I might not have thought of, was he said, "Look at the clothes people wear in their pictures. These are not people with huge wardrobes. And they probably, the same clothes that they might wear in one photograph, they'll wear in another because it's their special outfit." And so indeed, he was right. And I remember sitting in this house with these people that we thought were the descendants of the people who hid my father, who might have known something about my father's first wife and his daughter. We're sitting there, and I'm looking at the pictures, and it's like, wow, same shirt, and it's an unusual shirt. And I remember leaning over to my oldest son, Frank, and saying, could this be real? Because I didn't expect to really find any of this. And he said 110%. So we were incredibly lucky. I was tenacious. I followed this story and am delighted that I could now put it together for my descendants, put it together as a tribute to my ancestors. And at this particular time, when we're dealing with this awful virus, to tell a story of resilience and strength. That while these horrible things happened, we're still here. Ultimately, that's my message, a message of hope.
Does it put your life into a different context in the sense of, I mean, you grew up how you grew up, but with this extra information and knowing mm-hmm. this aspect and even the act of putting all of these puzzle pieces together, does it give your life, your wife's work, your family structure a deeper understanding of what perhaps was what is now known that was unknown that allows you to see things in a different way?
Oh, without question, without question. And I hope that my descendants will see things in a different way. I write in the book, I've, you know, done all the academic reading on the Holocaust and World War II. I've read the history, but I truly believe that it is capturing and telling those individual stories, that keeping the memory alive, that history is about what happened in the past. But understanding the individual stories and keeping those alive, keeping those memories alive, that's not the end of something. That's the beginning of something.
And it makes sense, too, of course, that your three sons, Frank, Jonathan, Joshua, they're all best-selling authors. They're all writers. They're all writing about a part of their lives growing up. And you're writing this story, too, which seems to contextualize as well.
Right, right. And people often say to me, well, how did you raise three sons who are writers? And, you know, I don't know the answer to that. And I don't think we raised writers. I think we raised storytellers. We raised people who care about the world they live in and use the skill of writing, which happens for some reason to be the skill they have, to make the world a better place, to tell their stories, to care about climate change, to care about eating animals, to care about the world. And that's what I'm really most proud of.
And of course, in your role as CEO of Sixth and I in Washington, D.C., this incredible center for arts and ideas and religion, I mean, this is where all of the things that you just mentioned really come together to be discussed. So there has to be some of that rubbed off on them as well.
I don't know. I mean, you know, people often say, so what did they do? Well, they watched TV and they ate junk food. I mean, you know, people say, how did you parent?
I think you can take more credit than that.
Well, we like to talk about things around the dining room table.
Yep.
You know, I worked full time. Of course, my husband did. But the dining room table was a place where we talked about ideas and we talked about what was going on. And with three sons, sometimes it was a little raunchy. But as long as it was a good conversation, we went with it. So I'll take credit for that part.
When you look at this book, as you say, of future generations and of doing it for you and doing it for your family, for average readers who come to the story and perhaps know mm-hmm. you from your work or know your sons from their work, what do you hope they take out of it?
I hope they have a better understanding of what happened in that awful period of time. And in the case of my particular family, our family wasn't killed in concentration camps. We were part of what was known as the Holocaust by bullets, where people were killed right where they lived. There were wonderful people who hid and helped, like somebody who hid my father, and there were people who were collaborators. And in a way, that is much more like what's happening in the world in other genocides. So I hope there's some better understanding of what happened then and the implications for now as we look at our world today with genocide still going on and understand how important it is to fight what's happening, to take a stand. I also hope that the book, by the way, has a lot of humor in it. Hiring an FBI agent, Frank and I went on this trip to Ukraine, and there were lots of funny things that happened. That life, as poignant and sad as it can be, also has humor. And most of all, that there's hope, that takes strength from these stories. Know that the future is not necessarily predestined. You can take a stand. You can do things like my mother. You can survive, be strong. And so I hope it's looking at the past, but understanding that with hope you can have a future. And that's particularly important these days as we isolate in our homes and walk around with masks on.
Well, it's such a remarkable story and so beautifully told. I want you to know we're still here, a post-Holocaust memoir. The book is published by Tim Duggan Books. Esther Safran-Foer, thank you so much for being with us. What a great pleasure to have you on the program.
Oh, delighted. Thank you so much.
Thank you very much. Be well. Again, the name of the book is I Want You to Know We're Still Here. It's published by Tim Duggan Books. You're listening to The Roundtable on WAMC.